Hi, we're discussing today the sugya of arvus, co-signers, co-borrowers, and partners who borrow beribus from a bank. What's going to be the halacha with regard to ribus? So the Gemara discusses in Sefer Bo Metzia that just like it's usur for a Jew to borrow money from a Jew and pay ribus, so too it's prohibited for a Jew to become a cosigner on a loan between a non-Jew and a Jew. In other words, if a Jew borrows money from a non-Jew, the halacha is that another Jew may not be a cosigner on that loan. There's a dispute in the Rishonim, what type of cosigner are we discussing? According to some Rishonim, we're only discussing a situation where the non-Jew would be able to go ahead direct, would need to go ahead directly to the cosigner and demand payment from the cosigner, and the non-Jew has no right to directly demand payment from the borrower himself. That's the opinion of the Rashba. The opinion of Rashi is that even in a case of an Ariv Kablan, where the non-Jew may demand payment from either party, from the borrower or from the cosigner, even in that case, it's prohibited for the cosigner to become a cosigner on the loan. Now, the general explanation of the concept of why it's prohibited for the cosigner to be a cosigner on this loan between the non-Jew and the Jew is that for some reason it's considered as though the non-Jew is lending money to the cosigner, and then the cosigner is subsequently lending that money to the borrower. So when the borrower pays the cosigner and the cosigner pays the non-Jew, it's considered that the cosigner had lent money to the borrower and the borrower paid back to the cosigner. That's the svara, the rationale behind this halacha. Obviously, this svara is obviously more understandable in the opinion of the Rashba, who holds that the case is where the non-Jewish lender has to demand payment from the cosigner. In that case, it makes sense to say that the main loan is between the non-Jew and the cosigner, and only subsequently the cosigner went ahead and lent that money to the borrower. So there's really two separate loans that we're dealing with, one between the non-Jew and the cosigner, second loan between the cosigner and the borrower. However, in Rashi's case, it's a little bit harder to understand why, even in the eventuality that the cosigner ends up making the payment to the non-Jew, and then the cosigner demands payment from the borrower, why do we consider it that there were two separate loans, one loan between the non-Jew and the cosigner, and the second loan between the cosigner and the borrower? But regardless, that is the opinion of Rashi. Now, the Shulchan Aruch brings down both opinions. It's not 100% clear which opinion is the Ikar opinion la'alacha. Some Rabbanim will tell you that the Ikar la'alacha is like the Rashba, and according to that, the halacha would be that it would be permitted for a Jew to become a regular standard cosigner the way it's interpreted b'zmaneinu. However, it's certainly not pashut, and it's certainly kedai to be machmer, like the opinion of Rashi, since there's no clear achra in this halacha. Now, the next question is, what's the halacha with the co-borrowers b'zmaneinu? Since 2008, when the banking reforms were instituted, the banks are not comfortable using a regular standard cosigner structure in order to make a loan. The banks will generally insist that the parties are not considered cosigners, but they're considered co-borrowers, that both people are equal borrowers. And that's sort of to strengthen their hand in demanding payment from either party. The bank can demand payment from either party. However, the way it's structured is not as a cosigner, but as a co-borrower. So there are Rabbanim that are of the opinion that this is considered worse, and in this case, the loan originally is prohibited. To explain this extra stringency, in the case of the Arev, in the case of a regular cosigner, whether we go with the opinion of the Rashba or whether we go with the opinion of Rashi, the Taz and the Nekudas HaKesef both write that the only time that you actually transgress a prohibition of collecting or paying ribus is only in the case where the arvus was actualized. In other words, in a case where the cosigner actually ended up making payment to the borrower, to the lender, to the non-Jewish lender, and the borrower ended up making payment to the cosigner. In that case, there is a prohibition of paying and collecting ribbis. However, in a case where the borrower made a direct payment to the non-Jewish lender, certainly in the case of Rashi, where the borrower is a borrower in his own right from the non-Jew, there it's even more easy to understand that in that case there was no prohibition of paying or collecting ribbis. However, the Taz and the Nekruz HaKesef write that even in the Rashba scenario, where it's called the Arev Shleiftutz, where the non-Jewish lender does not have the right to collect the money directly from the borrower, he has to go to the cosigner. Nevertheless, if the borrower volunteered and made a payment directly to the non-Jewish lender, in that case, it was no they did not transgress the prohibition of collecting or paying ribbis. That's the opinion of the Taz and the Shach and the Nekudas HaKesef. I have seen that in the Mishnah Seribas by Rabbi Levanoni Shlita, he takes the opinion that the Taz and the Shach are very shver, and it's hard to understand their psak. And he brings Rayas and he brings other Achronim, and his position is that in the case of the Rashba, where it's Arv Shleiftutz, where again there's the non-Jew is not allowed to collect directly from the borrower. So in that case, even if the borrower makes a direct payment to the non-Jew, that would be considered a violation of the Isser of Ribbis. However, in the case of Arv Kablan, that would not be a violation. But what he says is not 100% clear to me. I personally would assume that the halacha would be like the Taz and the Shach, and therefore even in the case of the Rashba, where the non-Jew cannot collect directly from the borrower, nevertheless the borrower pays directly to the lender, he has not transgressed the prohibition of paying ribbis, and the cosigner has not transgressed the prohibition of collecting ribbis. Now, coming back to the contemporary case of a co-borrower, we have to ask ourselves the following question. Does this halacha of the Taz and the Shach, assuming the halacha is like the Taz and the Shach, and even if the halacha is, even if we accept Rabbi Levanoni's position that in the case of Arev Shleiftutz, halacha is not like the Taz and the Shach, but in this case, the non-Jewish lender, the bank, can collect directly from the borrower. So pashtus would be that even though the cosigner has elevated his achrayis to the level of being a co-borrower, so the non-Jew has absolutely no restrictions on collecting money directly from the co-borrower, but nevertheless, the non-Jew can collect money either from the borrower or from the co-borrower. So one would have thought that in this case, there would be no prohibition against the borrower paying directly to the lender. However, there are some contemporary rabbanim who are of the position or of the opinion that it would be prohibited for the borrower to pay directly to the lender. The reason for their opinion is because they take the position that in the case where the loan is structured as being, instead of calling the cosigner a cosigner, instead of calling a co-borrower, what that means to us is that the proceeds of the loan are being distributed 50% to the borrower and 50% to the co-borrower. Then subsequently, the co-borrower goes ahead and lends that 50% of the money to the borrower, and therefore, if the borrower makes any type of payment, even directly to the lender, it would be considered as though he's paying that money to the co-borrower and the co-borrower is paying that money to the lender. That is the opinion of some contemporary rabbanim. However, there is a Tashbitz who rules clearly that it not only is it not worse than the regular case of Arev Kablan, the Tashbitz seems to indicate that the case of Shnayim Shalavu, of two co-borrowers, would be to the contrary, would be more kuladik, more lenient than the case of a regular cosigner. The Tashbitz seems to write that in the case of Shnayim Shalavu, where the two people who jointly borrow money from a non-Jewish lender, that either one of them can make the payment and then collect that money from the other borrower. In contrast to the halacha of a cosigner, where the cosigner is not allowed to make payment to the goy and then go ahead and collect that payment from the borrower. In this case of two people who borrowed jointly, the halacha would be, according to the Tashmit, seemingly, that either one can make payment to the non-Jewish lender, and then he can collect that payment from the other co-borrower. And this is in spite of the fact that in Shulchan Aruch and Chayshim Mishpat, Simon Ayin Zayin, the Shulchan Aruch describes, according to some opinions, the Shulchan Aruch quotes the opinions that hold that Shnayim Shalavu, two people who borrow jointly, are considered Arevim Kablonim Zalazeh. They're considered like a regular Arev Kablon, like a regular cosigner of Arev Kablon, which we said, according to Rashi, would be prohibited for one Arev to pay, for the Arev to pay, and to go ahead and collect that money from the borrower. So the question begs to be asked, why would the halacha be different by two co-borrowers, by Shnayim Shalavu, that the Tashma seems to indicate that one of the borrowers can make the entire 100% payment and then collect the remaining 50% from the other borrower. So the Shardeya is bothered by this. He does not accept that the Tashmitz rules this way conclusively. He accepts the possibility that the Tashmitz would not allow the co-borrower to go ahead and collect the 50% from the borrower and with plus interest. However, he does support the position, and he leans towards the position that the Tashmitz does allow it, and he explains that the reason for this is because, like we explained before, that in order to understand Rashi's position, that it's prohibited for the borrower for the cosigner to pay the money to the lender and then to collect that money with the interest from the borrower, one has to somehow make the assumption that whenever somebody cosigns on a loan and then makes payment on that loan, the way the halacha views that is that it's as though the cosigner borrowed the money and then lent it to the borrower. So the Shardei explains that is only justified in a case where the cosigner's the fact that the cosigner signed on the loan and was willing to be a cosigner, that's what encouraged this lender to lend the money. In that case, we can say, since the lender only lent because the cosigner was willing to be a cosigner, so it's as though the cosigner borrowed the money, and then he went ahead and lent that money to the borrower because he was the one that actually caused this loan to take place. However, in a case where the lender didn't really care who he was lending the money to, as is evidenced by the fact that both of the parties, I shouldn't say evidence, it's not evidence by the fact, but we have no reason to assume that the credit of any one of these two borrowers was the deciding factor in the lender's decision to go ahead and make this loan. The fact is that both of them presented themselves as wanting to borrow money, and therefore the lender decided to lend them the money. But we can't say that any one borrower was more creditworthy than the other one in a regular case of Shayim Shalavu. So that's how the Shardeya justifies the position of the Tashmitz and says that therefore the Tashmitz is of the opinion that we don't have this new halachic structure where we say that we cut the loan into two parts. We're not going to do that unless in some way the cosigner induced the lender to lend the money. Now, that would not apply to the situation of a co-borrower, where generally the case is that the co-borrower's credit is what's actually inducing the lender to make the loan. However, we do see from the Tashmitz and the Shardeya that it's certainly not worse than the regular case of a co-signer. And if the Rabbanim were to be of the position that for some reason we view this case as Shayim Shalavu, then to the contrary, it should be better. But to say that it's worse, is to me, seems like a very difficult position to take. Now, I heard this psak from my Rebbe, Rav Shlomo Miller, as well, Shlita Zal Zayin Gezun, that he holds as well that there's no prohibition against, that if, again, in the case where the borrower is paying directly to the lender, and he does and the co-borrower is not making the payment and trying to recoup that payment from the borrower, we don't have any issue of ribbis. And now there is a Erech Shai who disputes the position of the Shardeya. The Erech Shai writes that although the Shardeya tries to justify the position of the Tashmitz, the Erech Shai feels that the case of Shayim Shalavu is no better than the case of Arev Kablan. However, the Erech Shai also seems to only prohibit it in a case where one of the borrowers makes the payment and then wants to recoup that payment from the other borrower. However, in the case where a borrower makes a direct payment and does not expect to recoup that payment, Derek Shai also seems to be of the position that that would not be prohibited. I have seen that some Rabbanim quote a Maharshach that they want to interpret as saying that co-borrower will be prohibited even if the borrower pays directly to the guy and does not expect to recoup the payment from the co-borrower. However, I did not find the proof from that Maharshach to be conclusive. So the nafkamina of this is, generally speaking, a person is willing to be a co-borrower if they're very close to, either they have a close family tie or a close friend of the borrower. But there are klal, the people that call up, the person has a father that's willing to be a co-borrower or a father-in-law. And generally speaking, these people do not expect to recoup their payment from the borrower in the case that they make a payment. So in that case, the halacha would be that they would not need a heteriska. However, if we're dealing with a situation where the borrower tells us that in the case that the co-borrower makes a payment, he would want to recoup his principal and interest from the borrower, in that case, we would say that you need a heteriska in contrast to the, in other words, even though the tashbitz seems to say that it's allowed, but a co-borrower, I think, the heter of the tashbitz would not apply. But in the case where the father or father-in-law would not expect to recoup their payment, which is generally the case, I would think that you do not need a heteriska in that case. Now, another case that we need to discuss is the case of somebody who uses somebody else's credit card. It's very common in business that you'll have a person who has, let's say, an Amazon business or some other business, he has some cash flow problems, and he'll have a friend that has a credit card with high credit, high credit line, and want to maybe earn points or whatever, and the friend will lend his credit card to the business owner, and usually they plan on paying right away, but as occurs frequently, they don't actually make the payment on time, and they end up incurring interest, and the question would be whether the credit card holder would be able to recoup those interest payments that he was forced to pay from the borrower. So we have a Gemara Bava Metzia in the same Amud, Daf Ayin Aleph Amud Beis, that says clearly that if a non-Jew lends money to a Jew, and that Jew lends money to another Jew, so even though the first Jew is paying interest to the non-Jew, he would not be able to cover his expenses, so to speak, by collecting interest from the second Jew. So in the case where, let's say, I have a credit line, and the non-Jew is basically lending me money, I go ahead and I give my credit card to somebody else, he racks up a bill, he has to pay interest, and I end up paying that interest, I would not be able to collect that interest from that second from the second yid. Additionally, Taisus speaks out clearly in that case, the second Jew would not be able to pay, it would be prohibited for the second Jew to pay to the non-Jewish lender. That's what Taisus writes over there. In contrast to the opinion of the Taz and the Shach, who hold that there's no problem if the second borrower pays directly to the Goyish lender. In this case, it's not a situation of an arvus, but rather the Goy, the non-Jew, is making a direct loan to a Jew, and then that Jew subsequently lends that money to a second Jew. In that case, it will be prohibited for the second Jew to make a direct payment to the lender. So this opens up a whole can of worms. Now we have basically any time you go ahead and borrow somebody else's credit card, you have to make sure that you write a heteriska just in case there's going to end up being an interest charge. However, there is one exception, possible exception. We spoke out before that according to the Taz and the Shach, in the case of Arav Shleiftutz, even though the non-Jew does not have recourse to go to the second Jewish borrower, however, since the first borrower is not really a borrower, he's a Arab Schleiftutz, he's just a cosigner, so even though the non-Jew will go directly to that cosigner and can only go directly to that cosigner, nevertheless, the borrower is allowed to make a direct payment to the non-Jewish lender, and they don't transgress a prohibition against ribbis. So in the case where somebody used, a business owner used his friend's credit card, true, before the fact, they should have executed a heteriska just in case, but once that was done, the business owner might, under certain circumstances, might be able to make a payment directly to the bank. What do I mean? So sometimes he just swipes his friend's credit card. But in some cases, his friend opens up another credit card and makes the business owner an authorized user on his credit card. In that case, l'chayra, that is not considered to be a case where the card holder is a borrower and then he's lending the money to the business owner. In that case, l'chayra, the credit card company, the lender, knows that the end user of the funds is going to be that business owner, because they know that there's an authorized user, and the authorized user is the one who's actually making the charges on the card. Therefore, they're lending the money directly to the authorized user, and the cardholder is just like the Arav Shleiftutz. He's a person who has the full achrayus on the loan. The credit card company is not generally able to go directly to the authorized user and demand payment. However, the pashas would be that would not be considered more stringent than the case of Arav Shleiftutz, where, like we spoke at before, the borrower would be able to make a beeline for the lender and make a direct payment to the lender. So if the business owner is just swiping a credit card or using credit card numbers, it would be prohibited for him to make direct payment to the lender. However, if the business owner is an authorized user on the credit card holder's account, then perhaps it would be allowed for him to make direct payments to the lender. However, I did hear from my Rebbe Yerushalayim Miller Shlita that he is not comfortable with this, because he said that it's not so pasha that the lender knows that the authorized user is the one making the purchases. So he was not so comfortable with this arrangement, and he said it's better under all circumstances to make it at the risk. And even when you didn't make it at the risk and you use it, you should try to do something to take care of the problem by making it at the risk going forward, which there are ways to structure it, but it's not for this year. Thank you for listening.